welcome to Tuned to Yesterday, broadcasting shows from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. There's romance in this hour from the show Romance, later on from 1952. But first, a broadcast of the Lady Esther's Scream Guild Theater called Irish Eyes Are Smiling. It's an adaptation of the 1944 motion picture of the same name with June Haber and Dick Hames reprising their on-screen roles. A CBS broadcast from March 11th, 1946.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Tonight, Lady Esther presents the Screen Guild players in the 20th Century Fox picture, Irish Eyes Are Smiling, a charming and nostalgic musical romance that stars Dick Hames as Ernest Ball and June Haber as Irish. The Lady Esther Screen Guild players in Irish Eyes Are Smiling.
With someone like you, a pal could intrude. I'd like to leave it all behind and go and find somewhere.
Ah, yes. Yes, that music takes me back a long way. A long way. To the days I'm afraid we've almost forgotten. And still I could never really forget that girl. Mary O'Neill, the girl we called Irish. And that boy, Ernest Ball, whose great Irish heart gave us all those wonderful ballads the world has been humming ever since. Of course, at this point, you may be wondering who I am. Very well, I'm Edgar Brawley. And I flatter myself that in the early days of the century, no further explanation would have been needed. There was the time I struck gold up on the McKinsey, and the time that Wall Street wiped me out. That was the year before I won a fortune on the Derby, and a certain very blonde young lady sued me for it. But that's another story, isn't it? At the moment, we're concerned with our two young sweethearts. Of course, I wasn't there when they met, but they've described the scene to me so very often, I feel fully qualified to tell it to you. The city was Cleveland, and of all places, backstage at a famous burlesque theater. Mary O'Neill was in the chorus, or rather, she should have been. At that particular moment, she was play-acting in the star's dressing room, togged out in the star's most ravishing costume, pretending she was Belle Latour herself. And as fate would have it, at exactly that moment...
Yes? Come in.
I beg your pardon. Miss Latour?
Who?
Oh, I'm Ernest Ball, and before I say a word about my song, I want to thank you for answering my note.
Your note?
Oh, you know, the...
Oh, yes, your note. Oh, well, don't mention it. It was nothing.
Oh, it was everything. You see, I so seldom get encouragement that when I do, well, you've made me very happy, Miss Latour, and I thank you.
Well, you're very welcome, I'm sure. You said your name was Brill?
Ball. Ernest Ball.
Well, I'm glad to have met you, Mr. Ball.
The pleasure's been all mine.
Come in again sometime.
Thank you. I'd like to.
Good night.
Good night. Good night. Good gosh, the song.
The what?
Well, I almost forgot what I came for. Well, here, I can show you better at the piano. Now, the way I see it, Miss Latour, you're standing on a bridge, moonlight behind you. On the water, I mean. Understand?
Not quite, but keep on talking.
Well, first we see the whole thing through gauze, like a dream. And then as the music comes in, you start to sing.
Oh, you're a song plugger.
Oh, no. This is my own. It goes like this.
Sure, I love the dear silver that shines in your hair, and the brow that's all furrowed and wrinkled with care. I kiss the dear finger so toil-worn for me. Oh, God bless you and keep you, Mother McCree. There's a spot in my heart which no calling may own. There's a depth in my soul never sounded or known. There's a place in my memory, my life that you fill. No other can take it. No one ever will. Sure, I love the dear silver that shines in your hair, and the brow that's all furrowed and wrinkled with care. I kiss the dear fingers so toil-worn for me.
Oh, you really think so, Miss Latour?
Think so? Why, never in all my professional life.
In mine either.
Oh!
That's a big idea, wearing my costume.
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Latour. I was just trying it on.
Miss Latour?
Well, who do I look like? Carrie Nation?
Oh, I'm sorry, Miss Latour. I'm Ernest Ball. I mistook this young lady for you. And...
young lady? What am I, an old hag?
Oh, Miss Latour, it's all my fault. If you'll just listen to his song.
Who asked you? You stay out of it.
I can't stay out of it. I'm in it.
Don't you talk to me like that.
I'll talk the way I want.
Why, you fresh little brat, I'll...
Oh, no, you won't.
Oh, glory be, miss. What a left.
Shall we go, Mr. Ball? I've just been fired.
Yes, that's how he met her. Mary O'Neill, whose nickname was Irish. And by the time he'd walked her home, the boy was in love as they stood there on the steps of her boarding house.
What's so funny?
Oh, I can still see Latour hitting the floor. You've got a pretty good laugh.
You see, Pop taught me that before he died. He said a girl had to be good to be good.
You know, I don't mean to be fresh, but you know your eyes sparkle when you laugh?
And when I'm mad?
Oh, they sort of flash. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a song about you. It'll be just our song. I'll never play it for anyone else, just us. Maybe it'll go something like this. When Irish eyes are smiling, da-da-dee-dee-dee-dee-dee. What's the matter? Don't you like it?
Look, Ernest, I don't want to give you any false hopes. Tomorrow I'm leaving for New York.
New York? What for?
To find a job.
Can't you get one here?
In a burlesque show? No, thanks. I want to try for something better. As Pop used to say, I'm going to make a pie or spoil a pumpkin. So, goodbye.
Goodbye? Oh, you can't say goodbye. Look, I'll sell a song pretty soon. I'll make some money. We'll go to New York together.
I'm sorry, Ernest.
Oh, no, you can't go. I won't let you
Ernie,
go.
Ernie, please, you're hurting my arm.
Well, I don't care. You can't walk out of my life just like that. We just found each other.
Ernie, I'm warning you.
Go ahead, use your left. What do I care? What do I... Hey, you did.
I'm sorry, Ernie. Goodbye.
Irish, come out. Open up, darling. Will you please come out?
What's going on here anyway?
Oh, nothing, officer, nothing.
What's the idea? You looking for trouble?
No, thanks. I've got plenty already.
His troubles were just beginning. Working his way to New York was one thing. Finding Irish was another. And no one in the big city would even listen to his music, so finally he had to take a job. Plugging songs for Leo Betts, which as a matter of record is how I met him. I was dining at Reisenheimer's that night with Lucille Lacey, the musical comedy star, and Al Jackson, the famous gambler. I remember we were talking and laughing, paying no attention to the boy who was singing until...
Hey, that song is awful. Who's the kid singing?
There's his card, Al. The waiter just brought it over.
Mr. Ernest Ball, representing Leo Betts' musical publisher. Is that one of Leo's new songs?
Apparently.
Horrible, isn't it? What's Leo got against us?
I don't know. I don't recall ever doing him a favor.
Uh-oh. I guess that kid don't approve of it. I can hardly blame him.
Oh, wait a minute. He's going to make a speech.
Ladies and gentlemen, I know you didn't like that song. I don't like it either.
Well, my goodness.
I'm going to sing you another one. A song I wrote myself.
Well, it's going to be very good.
I hope you like it because, well, you just got to like it.
Oh,
there's a tear in your eye. And And I'm wondering why, for it never should be there at all. With such power in your smile, sure a stone you'd beguile. So there's never a teardrop should fall. When your sweet lilting laughter's like some fairy song, and your eyes twinkle bright as can be, you should laugh all the while, and all other times smile. And now smile a smile for me. When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morn in spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear the angels sing. When Irish hearts are happy, all the world seems bright and gay. And when Irish eyes are smiling, sure they steal your heart away.
Song slugger like that.
Broken down my eye. Edgar, I'll bet you $100 that kid's got $5,000 under his name right now.
$5,000? That kid? You've made a wager, my boy. Now prove it.
Sure. Isn't this his card on the table here?
Well.
Well, there's his name. And $5,000 under it. You want to count?
Oh, you slipped the $5,000 under his card. Very crude. Very crude.
Sure, schoolboy stuff.
Yeah, reform school.
You know, Al, you should have waited 6 months. You might have won that bet legitimately.
Legitimately? Him?
Edgar, in 6 months, that boy will have more than $5,000, much more.
What do you mean?
That's the loveliest song I've heard in years. And if you'll let me, I'll use it at the palace next week.
The palace?
Yes. Now close your mouth and open your ears. I believe he's going to do an encore.
When Irish eyes are smiling, sure it's like a morn in spring. In the lilt of Irish laughter, you can hear
at the palace, and the rest is a matter of history. Within a few months, all New York was singing Ernest Ball's tune, East Side.
I'm in a love of the silver shining in a hay, hay.
West Side.
Boy of mine, boy of mine, hold on, my heart was breaking.
All around the town. Yes, his songs bringing happiness to everyone but himself. For try as he would, he could not find Irish. That is, not until that night at Churchill. We were dining together again, Lucille, L. Jackson, and I, and Ernest had promised to meet us there. But as he came in the door...
Young lady, will you check my coat? Irish.
Good evening, sir.
Irish, what's the matter? Don't you remember me? Miss Latour, Cleveland? Irish, please don't act like that. Talk to me.
I'm the hat check girl here. I'm not allowed to talk to the customers.
Oh, but I've been looking for you everywhere. The newspapers, theatrical agencies, even the police.
You have?
Well, why do you think I came to New York? Irish, why didn't you let me know where you were?
I didn't know you were here. And then, well, I couldn't after you were famous.
Look, we've got to talk. Let's get out of here. Let's go someplace.
Oh, but I couldn't walk out of Mr. Churchill, not on a minute's notice like that.
All right. Now, we'll give him an hour. I'll go in and join my friends, and I'll pick you up here in an hour. All right?
All right.
Now, haven't you forgotten something?
What?
Something I've been dreaming of all these months. Gosh, Irish.
Oh, Ernie.
Young lady, may I have my hat? I beg your pardon. excuse me for intruding, but, well, it's warm out. I'll get my hat tomorrow.
Yes, they might have lived happily ever after, but that was the night I made my bet with Al. He'd tricked me on so many other bets, I made up my mind to beat him this once. I led up to the subject very casually, and at last he bit.
Are you trying to say that's all it takes to make a star? Luck?
Luck and the proper handling. Why, I could take any woman in this room and make her a star within 3 months.
Edgar, you're balmy.
Think so? How much?
Oh, make it easy on yourself. You never won a bet from me yet.
Then I'll tell you what. I'll give you a break. I won't pick any woman in this room, but I'll bet you I can make a star out of the next woman that comes out of the ladies' lounge, okay?
For how much?
Say, $25,000. You've got a bet.
$25,000, that was a lot of money. You understand, I couldn't afford to take a chance,
so I had myself a little talk with Lucille.
Oh, I understand, Edgar. I'm to be in the ladies' lounge, and when you whistle, I'm to come out. You're sure it's a joke.
A very big joke on Al.
Yes, and Mr. Jackson, I got it straight. I'll stay in there in the ladies' lounge sort of scrubbing around, and when you're all whistled, I'll come out, right?
With one slight correction, Ruby. You don't come out, you rush out. And be sure you're first.
Don't ask questions, Irish. I haven't time to explain. You just be in the ladies' lounge, and when I whistle, you come running, see?
I don't see Ernie, but I'll do it for you.
And so I whistled. In fact, we all whistled. And the door of the ladies' lounge burst open, and a girl came hurtling through on her face.
Irish, you made it. Here, let me help you up.
Oh, say, I've battled to get into those places, but never to get out of one. What's going on?
Millions of women powdering their noses, and it had to be her. Who is this girl?
Yeah, I'd like to know, too.
Hey, what is this anyway?
It's nothing, young lady. Just a little joke.
A joke? Well, where do you get off playing jokes on me? Why, for 2 cents.
Oh, now, wait a minute, Irish. Wait a minute. It's not Lucille's fault. I sent you in there.
Well, I don't like your sense of humor.
Please, it's only a bet.
First it's a joke, and now it's a bet. Look, if you think you can use me, just...
Miss O'Neill, what is this? You're talking to a guest.
I know who I'm talking to. Shut up.
Miss O'Neill, you're fired.
Fired? Nothing. I quit. And you can take your guests and keep them. Good night.
Irish. Irish, oh, Irish, wait.
Ah, I was really in trouble now. I had 3 months to win my bet, to make that girl into a leading lady, and she disappeared. She moved from her boarding house that very night. I was frantic, of course, and Ernest was flaming.
I'm fed up, I tell you, fed up with all of it. With New York, with Broadway, with bunco artists like you. I'm through. I'm getting out.
But, Ernest, I have $25,000 at stake, and if we find that girl, you've told me she can sing and dance, I'll still need your music to build a show.
All right, you can have my music. I've got a dozen songs. You can have them all. But don't ask me to stay. I'm getting out.
And so he disappeared, too. All I could hope for was to find the girl. Well, I did find her, finally, in a little cafe in New Jersey, singing for what amounted to her supper.
Pat your feet, you step and fool. Strut your stuff, use your curch. Trot your tootsies by the church. Cool your dog, we're coming through. Get set for Lanark's Avenue. Won't you stop, Miss Lizzie? Get busy. I want to see you walk. For the folks all state, the way you syncopate is the whole town talk. When you move so pretty, it's a pity the other girl is from. But the man you meet, like the way you shake your feet. Oh, you knock 'em busy, but Miss Lizzie Brown, you got the cutest strut in town.
The girl was good. There was no question of that. So I went to her dressing room, did some fast talking, explained the situation, and offered her a contract to which she had only one reply.
What about Ernest? Why didn't he come?
Ernest is taking a little vacation, my dear. He's gone out of town.
But he'll be back? Will he be back before we open?
Well, naturally. Oh, of course he'll be back, my dear. I hope. Wonderful. Now, just remember, in the second act...
Edgar, he didn't come.
My dear, we've got a hit on our hands. You'll be a star tomorrow morning.
Well, you said he'd be here.
Iris, don't you understand?
Possibly I can help to explain.
Ernest, you're back. There, you see, my dear? Edgar Brawley always delivers the mail. Well, I've got things to do, if you'll excuse me.
Hello.
Well, is that all you can say?
Oh, no. How've you been?
Fine, thanks. And you?
Pretty good.
That's nice.
I understand you didn't run away.
No, I changed my mind.
Oh, that's nice.
I understand you went on a long vacation.
No, I changed my mind. Well, I guess that's all there is to say.
Except one little thing.
What's that?
Darling, I still have a pretty good lift.
Hmm?
Unless you kiss me, one of us is going to get a black eye.
Irish.
Oh, Ernie, darling.
What's that? Oh, gosh, Irish, look, they've raised the curtain.
We're right on stage.
Well, what do we do? All those people out there.
Well, since you're here, why don't you sing?
Hmm?
Well, you know the words and music. Go on and sing.
Oh, well, all right.
With someone like you, a pal good and true, I'd like to leave it all behind and go and find
some place that's known to God. Just a spot to call.
Perfect peace, where joys never cease, out there beneath a kindly sky. We'll build a sweet little nest somewhere in the west, and let the rest of the world.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dick Haynes and June Haver, for a delightful half hour.
Thank you, Mr. Bradley.
Next week, the Lady Esther Screen Guild players will present Love is News. It will star James Gleason, Linda Darnell, and Bob Hope. Be sure to listen. June Haver can now be seen in the Technicolor picture, The Dolly Sisters. Dick Haynes can soon be seen in Do You Love Me, both 20th Century Fox productions.
The Lady Esther Screen Guild Theater on Tuned to Yesterday, a CBS episode from the 11th of March, 1946, featuring the Oscar-nominated motion picture Irish Eyes Are Smiling, and the nomination was for the Best Music or Scoring of a Musical Picture category for composer and conductor Alfred Newman. And while he didn't pick up that award, as of this recording, he holds the record for the most Academy Awards won for a composer at 9 wins. His most recognizable work is probably the theme for 20th Century Fox. You're listening to An Hour of Romance on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Levonier. Now time for the series romance with a story called Den of Thieves, a CBS radio broadcast from August 11th, 1952.
Romance. Finest stories of the world's greatest romantic authors. Stories of the courage, the devotion, the adventure of love. All strung on the bright thread of romance. Tonight, the makers of Wrigley Spearmint Chewing Gum bring you John Cleary's unusual story, Den of Thieves.
That had brought me from Plymouth disappeared around the corner with a wink of its taillight. And I found myself standing alone and cold in the high street. The English coastal town of Wardlesworth was not at all what I had imagined. Stone cottages lining the street were dark and silent in the early dusk. Below me was the bay, and I could see the masts of several sunken ships rearing above the water. The street was deserted except for a man leaning against the mailbox at the corner. I picked up my suitcases and walked toward him. Good evening.
Good evening, miss.
I just got off the Plymouth bus and I thought...
I saw you.
I thought perhaps you could direct me. I'm looking for the Malifax home.
Oh, you're the new American exchange teacher. You've taken Miss Bright's place.
Yes. Yes, that's right.
I rather thought you'd be in on the bus tonight. School starts tomorrow.
Look. If you would just tell me how to get to the Malifax home, I'd be most appreciative.
You're annoyed with me, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to be rude. It's just that I appointed myself a welcoming committee. There's no one at the Malifax home right now. They're out in the boat.
In the boat?
This is a fishing village.
Oh, of course. It just sounded strange, is all.
I'm Alec Cardigan.
Patty Flannery, from New York.
How do you do? Well, I don't imagine that Wurtlecliff is quite up to your expectations, Miss Flannery.
Well, it's more quiet than I thought it would be.
Yes, sometimes. But the people here like it. They and their grandparents before them have for hundreds of years.
Well, you don't live here?
Oh, great heavens, no. No, I'm just visiting.
Vacation?
Yes. Well, in a way. Look here, it's going to be several hours yet before you can get settled at the Malifax. Would you care for something at the Hungry Man?
Hungry Man?
That's the pub across the street.
Oh, well, I...
It's quite proper, I assure you. After all, it's the only public house in Wurtlecliff.
Oh, I don't know. After all, I'm the new teacher.
Oh, nonsense now. Come on, we'll have a nice pot of tea and some cress sandwiches right by the fire. After that bus ride, you must be freezing.
All right. But if the school board is annoyed, I'll tell them you're to blame.
I doubt they even have a school board here. Come along, I'll just get your bags, and here we go to the Hungry Man.
Cardigan was right. The warm tea and the funny little sandwiches made me feel human again. Even Wurtlesworth seemed more cheery as he sat laughing and talking in front of the open fire. Then all too suddenly, it was time for me to go. And we walked the length of High Street through the crisp summer night. The cheeriness of the pub faded as we came to a stop in front of one of the houses.
Well, this is it. The Malifax Mansion.
Oh, gloomy, isn't it?
Well, they're not a bad lot. You'll get along famously. I'll see you tomorrow, perhaps. Good night.
Good night. I'm Miss Flannery. Patty Flannery.
Yes?
I'm the new teacher. You are Mr. Malifax.
Yes. I'm Noah Malifax. Come in. Come in. Wait till I light this lamp. Oh. You're a pretty thing.
Mr. Malifax, where will I sleep? Live?
Oh, up there, at the top of the stairs. You're going to stay with us all winter, teacher?
Yes.
Here in this house?
That was what I understood.
And that was right, too.
Oh, this is Miss Flannery. This is my wife, Mrs. Malifax.
You're late. The book got in 2 hours back.
I was told you went home. So I went to the hungry man for something to eat.
Who told you?
Mr. Cardigan.
The surveyor chap.
Well, I don't know what he is. He didn't say.
I see. Well, we got back late. Noah.
Huh?
Take teacher's things up to her room. What did that surveyor, that Mr. Cardigan, tell you?
About what, Mrs. Malifax?
About us. And Wortle Cliff.
He said we should get on famously. That's about all.
Good. And we will, too. You've eaten?
Yes, at the pub.
Well, then I'll take you upstairs. We go to bed early here, when we can.
Oh, teacher's suitcases are in a room.
Yeah, well, we're just going up. Tomorrow's a school morning, Miss Flannery. We'll meet our children at breakfast. There are 6 of them. We eat at 7. Noah will take you to school at 8. Come along.
And that was my introduction to the household where I was to live for the coming year. My room was small, but there was a desk under the window, a kerosene lamp burning on it. An iron bed stood darkly in the corner. I thought of the comfortable backyard, complete with sun chairs and barbecue, the teacher with whom I traded places was enjoying. Miss Bright would like New York. I went to bed. In the morning, I woke with a start. It was almost 8. I quickly dressed and ran downstairs. Noah had already left. After a cup of coffee in the kitchen, I found my way to the schoolhouse. Alec was waiting for me.
You're late.
That's the second time I've been told that.
Well, how did you make out with the Malifaxes?
Oh, just famously.
Yes, they are hard to get used to.
You seem to know a great deal about the people here and the town for someone who's just vacationing.
Well, it's a small place. One hears things.
Noah said you're a surveyor.
Oh. Oh, so it's out, hmm? Well, yes. Yes, I am.
What are you doing here?
I'm with the Ministry of Works. There are 3 of us. But the other 2 chaps are billeted in a place near here. And we meet in the mornings up on the main road to Penzance.
Something secret?
No, not particularly. We're plotting a new road in case they open up an old army camp back in the moors.
Oh.
I said I was on vacation because, well, no need for useless talk.
Not even very romantic. I thought I was going to be late for my first day of school, but I seem to be the first here. I wonder where the children are.
Inside.
Inside where?
In the schoolhouse behind you. They were all there at 8 on the dot. You'll find them a very serious crowd. That's why you don't hear them.
Oh, if this had happened at home, they'd have torn the schoolhouse down by now. I'd better get in.
Yes. Good luck.
Good morning, children.
Good morning.
I'm your new teacher for this year, taking Miss Bright's place. My name is Miss Flannery. You may sit down now.
Children, while we are getting to know each other, there may be things I don't understand at first. So I'm going to need your help. And in turn, I may be able to help you. I think we'll get along beautifully. Now, for this first hour, we'll have an exercise. While you're doing it, I'll be able to go over some of Miss Bryce's old role books, and perhaps I can learn to know each of you a little sooner. So, for now, take pencil and paper and write your name at the top. Then write a few short lines about where you live, what you do, what you like, and what you will be when you grow up. When you're through, you can bring them up and put them on the corner of my desk. All right. Go ahead.
A most industrious task, Miss Flanagan. Permit me to introduce myself. Miss Ypsilanti, the squire.
Oh, how do you do? I'm Miss...
Miss Flannery, yes, I know. I'm pleased to know you. I have something to tell the children here. I hope I'm not interrupting your class.
Oh, no, not at all.
Of course, it will be of interest to you too, Miss Flannery, and it's something you should know about. You don't mind.
Of course not, sir. Go right ahead.
It is now just 8:53. Children, some half hour ago, the excise men were in the town square.
Excise?
Searching for smuggled goods, contraband. And you children will be happy to know that nothing was discovered amiss in the village of Wirtle Cliff.
That's twice this year.
That's right, Falcon, very right.
Well, that's very interesting, isn't it, class?
And now, children, I think Miss Flannery ought to be let into the picture. Would you step this way, Miss Flannery? Bascom, would you just lift the lid of your desk like a good child? There you are.
But this desk is filled with perfume.
Yes, indeed. French perfume. Imported. Thank you, Bascom. You may close your desk now. And Adam, would you lift the lid to your desk, please? Thank you, my little man.
Nylon.
Correct again, Miss Flannery. And again, they are imported. Thank you, Adam. And now close your desk and get back to your lesson. I think it is needless to go through the entire classroom, Miss Flannery. Each desk would be much like the others, each filled with some little goodies from the continent for the people of Britain.
Contraband. This is what the excise men were looking for.
Oh, but they'd never think of looking in the schoolroom of the young American exchange teacher. And if they did look, think what an awful fix you'd be in. Because after all, the villagers would stick together. And I should have to blame someone. Shouldn't I, Miss Flannery?
But this is...
Preposterous? Not at all. Rather, it's a lucrative business. Going to tell the coppers on us? No. No, you're not the type. You've come all the way from America to Wirtle Cliff to be informed, not to inform. Oh, you must do some informing, of course, but you will restrict it to the children. Won't you, Miss Flannery?
Smugglers. A whole village of smugglers. Even the children.
Quite right, Miss Flannery. And they're fine children, following in their father's footsteps. If we are not caught, the children of these children perhaps will carry on the business.
Oh, but you will be caught. Sooner or later, surely you'll be caught.
No, perhaps. But I doubt it. The whole plan has been carefully worked out. And besides, I'm the, shall we say, mastermind.
And I've never put in such a day in my life. Did you know the whole smuggling plan is run by Squire Ypsilanti?
Yes.
What are we going to do?
Well, my advice is to stay in the village and not to try to leave it.
You mean I'm in danger?
Yes.
Oh, can't you do something about it?
No, it's not my department.
Oh, the whole thing is like a nightmare, a comedy nightmare. How does this happen to a whole village, a community that to a man is criminal?
Paddy... For 700 years, this has been a fishing town. Huh? People have made their living from the sea. Oh, then came the war. And for some reason, no one knows why, the fish left.
Just like that?
Just like that. There's no industry here. There's nothing. Well, the people had to live. The smuggling started.
But it's wrong, Alec.
I know. But people have to eat.
And the children. They treat it like a great, wonderful game.
Well, to them it is.
And this Mr. Ypsilanti, the squire, how does he excuse himself? He's an educated man. He has money.
Well, I suppose they needed someone to coordinate them.
The children look on him as some sort of a hero.
Yes, I suppose they do. Each one hopes someday to take his place as boss.
What am I to do, Alec? Must I just sit there and mind my own business? Forget I know anything about it?
If you want to stay alive.
And so I stayed on at Wordlesworth, living at night in a smuggler's home and teaching by day in a schoolhouse that served as a depot for the contraband items. But days passed. And Alec Cardigan was always near at hand, so they were not unpleasant. He was the pipe-smoking sort of traveled Englishman who can be completely charming. And he was. One rather stormy Saturday night, we had gone to a movie in the next village, and it was late before we got back. We were standing before the small peat-burning grate in the Malifax home.
Oh, that fire feels wonderful.
Well, if it weren't so late, I'd fix you something hot to drink.
Oh, no, not for me. I've got to be running along anyway.
Thanks so much for the movie.
Hmm?
Cinema.
Well, it's a good job I had you along. That wind would have my little two-seater right off the cliff if you hadn't been there to weigh it down.
Oh, what a backhanded compliment that is.
Oh, no, seriously, Patty. I've enjoyed it. Every moment of it. Oh, the only harsh note is that I won't be staying on here much longer. I'll be sorry to leave. I'll miss you, Patty.
I'll miss you too, Alec. But then that school full of strange, silent children will need my undivided attention.
Yeah. Well, I'm off, Patty. I'll see you tomorrow,
you
perhaps.
You two come in. Was there any sign of Noah?
Why, no, Mrs. Malifax.
Why, in a blow like this, you can't see across the square.
Why, where is Noah?
Out with the boat.
The boat? Tonight?
In weather like this?
Aye. To pick up more good from the French coast.
Well, he'll be lucky if it's not washed overboard and himself along with it.
Noah can handle a boat in any weather. But I wish he was home.
He'll be all right.
Yes, of course.
But why in the world on a night like this?
Mr. Ypsilanti said it's not too bad. And besides, there's no excise men after he's sniffing about.
Mr. Ypsilanti said it was okay.
What?
This Mr. Ypsilanti. Where is he now, Mrs. Malifax?
Why, home, I suppose.
That's what I thought.
Now, Patty, I'd stay out of this if I were you.
You'd stay out of it. Fine. That's just fine. That's just what Ypsilanti's doing while those men, the whole village, are out there in that storm. You'd stay out of it. Well, let me tell you something. Oh, no. No.
It's all right, Mother. I'm all right.
Home, Noah.
I'm home.
Oh, no.
But I lost the boat. It sunk back there in the black water by the rocks. It's gone.
Noah, you're hurt.
Not bad, teacher. But my two men are drowned.
Next morning, Sunday, broke fresh and clear after the storm. By the time I dressed and got downstairs, breakfast was finished, and Noah was alone in the front room reading the family Bible. I went on through to the kitchen, warmed some coffee, and heated up the now cold porridge. Sitting at the kitchen table, my mind wandered to my home, to New York. I came back to Wortlecliff with a snap. Noah was talking to someone in the front room.
Oh, I shouldn't ask.
With Mr. Ypsilanti.
I want you to go out again tonight, Noah.
But my boat's under the water, Squire. I can't.
You could get another boat. Borrow one, I mean.
Last night was bad, too bad. The lads will be fixing their gear.
Noah, this is important. More important than any trip we've made yet.
But, Squire...
You might almost say it's imperative.
I've got to go.
No, you're the best man in the village. I don't like to give orders. You know that. Let us just say, I think it would be advisable.
When do I start?
There's a good man. This trip will be slightly different. You'll not pick up anything this time. No, this time you'll carry a passenger. Man.
Carry a man? To where, Squire?
To the coast of France. I'll give you the details later, but be ready just after dusk. This man will meet you on the beach. Agreed?
Agreed, Squire.
And now, if you've coffee warmed, I'll just have a cup and be on my... Good morning, Miss Flannery.
Good morning, Mr. Solander.
Breakfast?
Yes.
Teaching is a great profession, Miss Flannery.
I like it.
One garners so many bits of information. Have you found that sometimes knowledge can be dangerous?
Sometimes.
For instance, if one overheard a conversation, it might be better to forget about it entirely, mightn't it?
It would depend on what was said.
Yes, of course. To quote somewhat tritely, Miss Flannery, a little knowledge is a dangerous thing. Oh, but then so far you've been such a clever girl. Oh, what a pity. Coffee is all gone.
Mr. Solanti's cherubic face wrinkled into smiles when he left. He obviously didn't know how much I'd heard of his conversation with Noah. One thing was certain. He was nervous and worried. Whatever he was planning was big. Bigger even than the smuggling. And this meant that I was in more danger than before. I searched out Alec, and together we sat in a small, empty schoolroom while I told him everything I knew.
And he didn't name the person?
No, no, he just said the man would be on the beach to meet Noah after dusk.
I see.
Oh, Alec, I'm afraid. I'm really afraid.
Oh, now, Patty, look. It's a beautiful sunny Sunday morning. The birds are singing.
Alec, I know it sounds crazy, but this man of Solanti is evil.
Oh, Patty, I suppose I wasn't very funny. Patty. Patty, I'm sorry.
Oh, Alec.
A most touching scene. Just stay where you are, Mr. Cardigan.
Is there any need for that gun?
I rather think there is. And I am sorry, Miss Flannery, but like so many of your sex, you talk too much.
You can leave her out of this, Ypsilanti.
Oh, I'm afraid I can't. You see, I'm much more thorough than you, Mr. Cardigan. You made so many errors of omission when you posed as a surveyor. I checked through my contacts, and there are no plans for a new road, no surveyors working in this area, nothing. But MI5 has three men down here.
MI5?
MI5 is the top investigation service in this country, secret service, you know, and our Mr. Cardigan is a member of it.
What have you done with Rupert Beck?
I imagine he's at my house having his 11s.
You're a cold one, Ypsilanti. A communist spy in your home, and you're sheltering him, preparing to smuggle him out of the country. Then you're going to make these villagers a party to it.
Oh, how moral we are, Mr. Cardigan.
So he's the man you were going to take to the continent?
Yes, Miss Flannery, only not where. I am going to have him smuggled out tonight.
Not by me, Squire.
Noah!
What's going on? Noah!
Thanks, Noah. If you hadn't come along... Well,
I heard most of it, Mr. Cardigan, but I don't understand.
Oh, Beck is a communist spy. He's working in our atomic research plant. He's trying to get out of the country with valuable data.
And Squire Ypsilanti was a communist?
No, he's just a traitor. He was offered a great deal of money for this.
And you knew about the smuggling all the time?
Yes, Patty, yes. But we had to wait.
Am I for jail? And my wife, too?
No, I don't think so, Noah. Not now.
Mr. Cardigan, we villagers may have cheated the government a small slice now and then, but we don't hold with betraying it.
No, I know.
But, Mr. Cardigan, that what I came to see about. Look.
Huh? A fish?
Aye. And young Boscombe's got more, and so have the other children. They fished this morning just for fun.
You mean the fish are back?
It looks that way. We were going out in the boats within the hour to make certain.
Oh, Noah, that's wonderful.
Oh, they'll stay this time, it is.
And now you can give up the smuggling.
Aye. It'll be dull around here for a while. But we'll get used to it. Well, shall I round off some of the lads, Mr. Cardigan? We could go after that Rupert Beck together. I'd like a hand in it.
Good lad, Noah. Come on, let's go.
And so within an hour, the entire village had silently closed in on the squire's house on the headland. And Rupert Beck was caught. But he wasn't having tea. He was hiding in a clothes hamper beside the laundry tub.
Yes, really, that's the whole thing, Paddy.
I ought to hate you for telling me so many lies.
Oh, I had to, darling. I'm sorry. The government doesn't allow for love.
Oh, Alice, you're a fool. A delightful one.
Mm. Well, now I do have something to tell. Something I've been saving. I'm going to ask Miss Flannery to stay over on this side of the Atlantic for good. Not for just a year. I'm going to ask her to be Mrs. Alec Cardigan. You think she would?
Why don't you ask her, Alice? Just ask her.
Romance Untuned to Yesterday from the 11th of August, 1952 on CBS. And so closes this hour of Romance Untuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great shows from radio's past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Livonier. Thanks for tuning in.